Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
From Providence, Rhode Island, in the Minute with Mary studio, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. And welcome back. My name's Mary Larson.
And my name is Blake, and I love story time.
Story time?
Yep, Hagrid telling a story about just going and getting basically beat up and strung up by giants.
Oh my God, why do you love that?
Just because it does something that I think nobody expected at this point.
Mm. Oh, we didn't expect him to come back. That's for sure. At this, I agree. It's a welcome change, and we get to explore a bit more of the magical world. That's really what this chapter did, in addition to us hanging out with Hagrid and then Umbridge, of course. Well, before we get too much into this chapter, I wanted to remind you, of course, a little bit about what it is. It is chapter 20 of the Order of the Phoenix, and it's titled Hagrid's Tale. All right, here is the quote. Giants? Who said anything about giants? Who you been talking to? Who's told you what I've... Who said I've been, eh? And that, of course, is Hagrid freaking out, having a... exaggerated response. That's what I've been telling our children when they freak out about something that really doesn't deserve it. You know, it's kind of that knee-jerk reaction to an extreme. You know, was that response definitely necessary for that, or was that a little exaggerated? And especially listening to this in the audiobook version, the kids are there, the trio's there, excited to see Hagrid, and everything's going okay, and then they bring up the word giants, and he freaks out. He freaks out because he's nervous. How did they figure it out? Well, buddy, it's not too hard to figure out. Even Umbridge knows what's going on. Mm, so
exactly.
That's that. All right, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
If it's been a while since you've read chapter 20, a little recap for you is this is when Hagrid returns. He tells his story about the journey that he went on with Olymp, a.k.a. Madame Maxine, to the land of the giants. Sadly, they are unsuccessful in gaining an alliance. And this is Hagrid's first time meeting Professor Umbridge. Oh, God. She just sucks. She sucks at all the fun.
Yeah, she sucks. She's awful. And I like his how he's blissfully unaware of Umbridge and what kind of iron fist, you know, with which she's been ruling the school. And because of that, when he's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to introduce this little surprise. Hermione's like, oh, you got to be careful. And nah, it's going to be fine. We'll be all right. And that'll be that.
He's such an optimist. He has hope and faith in everyone, including the toad-like Umbridge.
Yeah, not great.
We want to thank everybody at jointhenerdclan.com. By the way, if you're not a member there, you can join for as little as $2 a month. They are the group that keeps the podcast lights going, that help us make all of these podcasts free to the world. That's right. So if we bring you Lumos in a time of Nox, and you're not yet a member there at jointhenerdclan.com, please think about it. It's less than a cup of coffee, and it truly makes a difference for people to be able to get these podcasts everywhere. And to our friends who are already members there, thank you so incredibly much. All right, let's get into it, Blake.
So, what do you think is the value of a chapter like this, Mary, other than just setting it up for what's coming?
I think it's more world building. We spent the past 4 years, honestly, the first 2 years, getting to know Hogwarts. And then in the third year, we got to learn a little bit more about the Shrieking Shack. And in the fourth year, we get introduced to individuals from different countries in the Wizarding World, whether that's through the World Cup, the Quidditch World Cup, or it's through Beauxbatons or Durmstrang. And so to me, this is a part of the Wizarding World. This is understanding that it's not even just wizards. You know, we've gotten to know a bit more about the different people and beings that live in the forest. We were able to learn a bit more, and we continue to learn more about the elf situation. And now we get to know about the giants. And we've heard about giants. They've spoken a little bit about them, but particularly because Hagrid is one of the core characters in this series, I think it's important for us to understand more about where he's come from and what his people are like. So much of this series is about being alone and feeling like you don't fit in and not having people who are like you. And that's really the source of Harry in the very beginning. And he finally finds his people by going to Hogwarts. And to me, this has always kind of been a sad thing for Hagrid. Being a half giant, he would go to school, didn't see people like himself there. He spent his time as groundskeeper because he couldn't even graduate from Hogwarts. He had his poor little wand broken in half. So he's not even like a student. He's not a full wizard. He doesn't get to bippity boppity boo like everybody else. He finally meets Madame Maxime, who's in denial at first that she's even part giant. It's like the first person he sees and he's so excited. So to me, this being a core character and being able to understand where he came from, what that culture was like, is really important.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that I like about this too, and I kind of alluded to it earlier in the episode, is that it achieves something that I don't think everybody expected. I think everybody kind of thought, oh, Hagrid's back. Everything's going to be okay now that Hagrid is back. Regardless of where he was, regardless of what he was doing, you always get the sense from Hagrid that even though, you know, he may not always say or do the right thing, that he's kind of a warm blanket.
I mean, he's always there with rock cakes, ready to help catch right. your slugs that you're spewing out.
Right. Better out than in.
Exactly.
But in this case, that warm blanket, I mean, yes, is there, but nothing good is necessarily coming from Hagrid. I mean, he's beat up physically. He can barely see out of one eye. And I love the descriptor that the author uses, that he still had like congealed blood on his hair, matting it down. It's almost like he's defeated, and you don't know why. But again, like I said, when Hagrid shows up, you expect it to be okay. You expect to feel like you're in good hands. And when he returns, that's not the case at all. In fact, he's giving the kind of worst case scenario of a situation that you didn't necessarily know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But when you hear it, you're like, oh, no. Oh, no. And not only does I think that hurt Hermione, Ron, and Harry, like on a personal level, that he is actually physically beaten, and at least I think a little emotionally beaten. But more specifically, I think it sets up for the rest of the book and for the rest of the series, once again, that, you know, if Cedric dying didn't give you the idea that not all is just going to be okay, mm-hmm. then this is another way to show you that the world is not going to be okay. This may be a kid's series, but bad things are going to happen, right? Like things are going to happen that to the wizards or to our trio or to Hogwarts that you're not going to expect. I mean, the last thing that we all anticipated was Hagrid coming back and saying, I went to the Giants, I did the thing, and I failed. By the way, I found out my mom died too.
I'm not going to lie. One thing I wasn't prepared for was a dragon steak on his face. He loves dragons. That'd be like me having a steak of cat.
Yeah.
Or a golden retriever on my face.
A golden retriever.
I couldn't have been like a blast-ended Scroot steak. He loves dragons. Right?
Yeah, and I like that little bit detail too where he's like, yeah, it's supposed to look like that. It's dragon meat. Of course it looked poisonous. And that it's green shaded. I think the author does a lot of great things in trying to explain her world, like you said, Mary.
I kind of wish that dragon meat or dragon blood could have been brought up another time in the series so that, you know, Harry could have had this knowledge maybe when they're out in book 7. Mm. Oh, I know it can help cure that.
Yeah, right.
Where are we going to find a dragon, you know?
So did you get a little bored, though, reading this chapter where it was like, okay, Hagrid's telling a story. It's the trio. What about this? And what about that? And how did you know that he was the Grog or the Gurg? And how did you know that you weren't doing well? And it was.
I could take it that you very, did.
It was very heavy exposition.
Remember, this is my favorite character.
That's
so
true.
I am here with bated breath. And listeners, if I haven't said it recently, I will say it again. My dad is like Hagrid.
Yes.
And my dad, you know, when he comes in and he's like, oh, move out of the way, Fang. Like, I just got home. Come on, man. You know, that's what my dad sounds like in the doorway with his dogs grumbling. Yes. Oh, get out of the way, Biscuit. Come on.
Yep.
You know, so I took this chapter with not only does Hagrid remind me of my dad in many ways, but also I love this character so much. I can't get enough of his speaking. When I read it pre-audiobooks, I would have the hardest time figuring out what the heck he was saying. So for him to speak for most of this chapter, it's really hard.
Yeah.
And I would have to say it out loud. Like sometimes visually, I couldn't figure out what he was saying. So I'd have to vocalize it. So to me, this chapter, whether it was the first time I was reading it, or even now as I listen to Jim Dale on Audible Book, who takes it to a completely beautiful Grammy winning level, I'm here for it. I'm a Hagrid lover. And if you were going to explain to me this completely other culture, I feel like I'm learning, you know, about the giants in the Lord of the Rings verse, you know, bring on the J.R.R. Tolkien, where we're going to go for great detail to tell us about different societies that live among the mountains. So for world building purposes, yes, I am here for it. And I think that these kids, I think the trio who love Hagrid, who want to know about his heritage. And also, if you think about Ron, like Ron's heard about creepy, scary giants his entire life.
Mm.
You know, they're like the boogeyman to Ron, but real. Like they know they exist. And then for Harry and Hermione, they're still in somewhat shock that this is a real thing. For him to just casually be like, oh yeah, the vampire hung out with a vampire and these giants, and here's how they rule each other. They just kill each other in the middle of the night. Are you flipping kidding me? Like, imagine, Blake, if we were told that in Canada, giants exist and this is how they claim ownership. They just, in the middle of the night, they just kill one another. And they're that close. They're that because they're here.
Yep.
What?
It wouldn't surprise me. Things happen in Canada. Like half that country is uninhabitable. So
I think it just won an award for being the like kindest country or something.
Oh, really?
Or most friendly.
I feel like Denmark would be like, oh no, that's like the best place to live.
Norway also won something.
Norway. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Whatever. I'm happy that I'm in New England. We ain't happy here. That's okay. It's how we roll. I was going to say, God bless the talents of Jim Dale and what that man must have had to do in order to read this chapter. His Hagrid voice, by the way, is spectacular. If we haven't said that already, let's just make that official. You really get a sense of Hagrid.
It was actually rated second best country in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. By whom? What's the publication?
I don't know. Hold on.
Oh, it's probably some Canadian dude writing it in his mom's basement. Yeah, Canada's great. Love it. the amount of takes that guy must have done in order to complete that chapter. I can't even imagine the recording process, what that must have looked like. But you did bring up the trio in a funny sense. And there is one little notation that I liked quite a bit, Mary. At the beginning of this chapter, it's where Ron and the trio are standing under the what's it called?
Invisibility.
The invisibility cloak. And the author mentions that Ron has finally grown so tall that he has to crouch under the cloak. And, you know, throughout this whole time, you've kind of seen the trio one way. Mm-hmm. There have been other explainers. There have been other little details that have come through, I think, in the books. But this is the first acknowledgement of their size. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm sure that there are others, but this is the first one that sticks out to me where I'm like, oh, my God, now they have to crouch in order for the cloak to cover their feet as well. Like how it's such a simple little detail. It's such a simple little character bit that you probably wouldn't normally either one think of or two care about. But when it's in there, you're like, oh, I get it. Like, how awkward must it be for these three to be like, do you have to coordinate your steps now?
Oh, yeah.
Do you, you know, as opposed to when they were first years, they could just kind of probably do whatever they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I really, really, really quite like this little bit from the author. I think that's great. I also kind of get this great bit of, I get a great sense of where the world, not necessarily how it's built, but the tenor of the world, right? This is the first time outside of the Death Eaters that you're getting a sense that the good guys, they don't have it all put together. And the good guys aren't attracting people to their cause. Yes, the Dark Lord has returned. Okay, great. And you'd think that everybody was terrified of this guy. And that's why I continue to say, Mary, this chapter does something that I don't think really anybody at the time, or anybody that's reading it right now, would expect. And that is, people are starting to sympathize with the bad guy.
Why? Oh, you mean giants?
The giants.
They're not people.
But wow. Oh, man.
Not great, Bob.
That. Ooh, man. You know what? All my giant folk out there.
I just went there. Who am I? I'm
Mary at tallmommedia.com.
Oh, God. Seriously. Okay, let's just be real. Golgamath, I wouldn't refer to as a person, okay?
But you know what I mean. Like, there are creatures and people and non-humans, okay, Mary, that...
See, when you say people, I'm thinking humans.
But you know what I mean. Like, there
I
are...
I didn't know.
There are...
Beings.
There are groups of beings in the wizarding world that are not associating themselves with the good guy. And in fact, they're doing it with the obviously the direct opposition. My question to you, Mary, is this. Why?
Because they know what it's like to be an outsider. This is a commonality. These guys have squashed us down. They don't give us magic. They don't let us be in charge. Let's band together.
Yeah.
You know, didn't work out for us either. With us, you could be our equals. With us, you can have more power. With us, you don't have to live in these forests anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll give you some more magic. We'll do some cool things. Mm-hmm. We got some cool vanishing cabinet. We got lots of cool stuff.
Yeah. I think there's also a psyche there, too, where even Hagrid himself says, listen, they don't mind magic. They just don't like it when you use it against mm-hmm. them. Now, that, to me, that is a very, very loaded, pregnant statement, right? Because mm-hmm. implicit there is... that magic has been used against them in ways that are probably not favorable to giants in many instances. Whether or not it was brought upon them by themselves or it was the arrogance of wizards as they are now, I think that has yet to be determined. Regardless, at least according to the giants' perspective, magic has been used against them in a way that is offensive.
And also, giants like violence, okay? They love it. They're here for it.
Sure.
This is just an ongoing thing. So for them to be told this is our plan, and it sure as heck involves violence, where you can just go crazy. Oh, by the way, you know how you like to kill humans when they come up here looking at your mountains? You could do as much of that as you want. Now, what is interesting to me, of course, is that Voldemort and the Death Eaters are going after the giants, the vampires, the werewolves, and yet these are the same people who are so concerned about pureblood wizardry. You know, and you see Umbridge, who aligns very much frequently with the Death Eaters, and she has so many things against half-bloods and, you know, oh, you're centaurs and you're not really a real wizard and all these kind of things. So it's
interesting
to me that these creatures sometimes are seen beneath them. These magical creatures, these magical beings are oftentimes seen beneath them, but they're here to recruit them and they can speak to them in ways that would still be alluring to them. Yeah, you may not be our equal. We may not be giving you a wand. We may not give you Malfoy Manor, but we'll let you bash as many heads in that you want to. We'll
sure.
let you do the war. We'll let you kill all the muggles that you want.
Yeah.
Go for it. And that's something that appeals to many giants.
Well, I think there's also on an intellectual level, right, Mary, that there is like, I think either way, whether it is, all right, the good wizards or the bad wizards, like, let's just say that, okay? Either way, the giants are right now looked upon poorly as less than. The difference between the bad wizards and the good wizards is that the good wizards don't want to acknowledge it, but the bad wizards don't care, right?
Yeah.
They see them and the werewolves and the vampires as a tool. That's it. That's all. And, you know...
Well, it's also something that is emotional, right? I mean, even think about... talking about difficult things that have happened in whatever country you're in. Like, atrocities have happened in pretty much every country, right? Where, like, you've done... the people before you, whether it was your ancestors or the people who lived in that land, had fought in wars and had done things unjustly against somebody at some point in history. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily what people lead with. They're not like, hey, remember how in the past our countries hated each other? Let's clear that air. But on the flip side, the Death Eaters are willing to talk about the ugly. They're willing to stir up the emotions. Mm. Where I feel like Hagrid goes in, he does the conversations that you have at Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on holidays, we don't talk politics. We don't talk religion. And the Death Eaters came in. They were like, all right, let's chat. 2024 election.
Yeah,
let's
right.
do this. So I think that it's riveting for people or beings that crave that kind of excitement.
And it's kind of apropos that you say that, Mary, because Hagrid has displayed a very clear inability to lie. And to cover things up for either his...
Another reason I love him.
For his sake of goodness or for his sake of character. And that is obviously evidenced by his interaction with Umbridge at the end of the chapter. But before we get into the rest of the chapter and all the other things that are going on with Hagrid and his grand inability to lie, let's talk about our partners and who helps make this podcast run.
We've had a new recent sponsor here at Mary and Blake Media. It's D&D D&D Adventure Club. It's a monthly subscription of Dungeons & Dragons adventures built for beginners. Now, these adventures are amazing stories written and designed for kids, families, and honestly, anyone interested in learning how to start a game of D&D. A new adventure arrives in your mailbox every single month. There are streamlined rules, amazing designs, pre-built characters, and truly lets anyone pick up the game and start telling the stories today. We first learned about D&D Adventure Club because our son wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons, and Blake and I have never played it. And it was really hard to figure out whether it was online or if we were watching YouTube tutorials. I tried to get some books out of the library, and I just became even more confused. D&D Adventure Club breaks it down in an easy, beautiful, fun, accessible way. Blake and I have played it with the kids. We love it. You can head on over to the website and use the coupon code MARY20, that's M-A-R-Y-2-0, at checkout to get 20% off your order.
So another thing here, I think, Mary, that kind of shows up too is the fact that the good guys, the good wizards, they really aren't in a position to give the giants anything. I mean, you have Umbridge, who's running the school, essentially, and she is backed by the Ministry, who seems pretty intent on denying the fact that Voldemort is there and should thereby not even take any action to help recruit the giants. And even if they had the idea that Voldemort was back, would they even do anything about it? Right? So, yes, it's nice to offer this, you know, everlasting flame and a goblin helmet and, you know, whatever. But those don't really mean anything. Whereas, you know, someone like Voldemort and the Death Eaters actually can say, yeah, we're going to, if you come with us, we're actually going to do X, Y, and Z. You see what I mean?
I do.
Like, there's a difference.
I think Hagrid really had hope. I think he really had hope, especially being with Madame Maxime, that maybe they could bridge this gap,
yeah,
that they could help the giants. And as we see with him bringing home his brother,
yeah,
he really believes that that they can be taught, that you can help integrate them into somehow, some way, into some society.
But there is this sense, though, Mary, that there is at least a dialogue, right, with the original Gurg. And I can't remember his name off the top of my head right now.
Begin with a K.
But then all of a sudden there's this drastic switch between the original Gurg and then the new Gurg. And there's a, it seems like a philosophical difference between the two, right? Which, in and of itself,
between the two Gurgs?
Yeah.
Which is really just a killing.
I know, but there had to have been some sort, like, Hagrid and Olymp show up, right? And they're offering gifts. It's a big public thing. And it just so happens that the next day or 2 days later, the original Gurg dies or gets killed?
Yeah.
To me, that suggests more like when Hagrid shows up to begin with, the original Gurg, again, I can't remember his name. I'm going to have to look it up. But he's there. He's the laziest one. He's getting food. He's sitting down. People are around him. And all of the ire is, I think, thrust upon Hagrid and Olymp.
Carcass was the original Gurg.
Carcass, okay.
Well, I mean,
and then all of a sudden, when he accepts the gift, and it seems like everything is like at least going in one direction, then all of a sudden this other guy shows up, and he gets, you know, Carcass gets killed. That to me, it feels a little bit more of like a philosophical difference. One so much that there is enough of an understanding in the giants that this person is doing us wrong by leading us this way.
Well, McNair had been talking with Golgamath for a while. So Golgamath was telling McNair about Hagrid and Madame Maxime being there. This is pre him being Gurg. So Golgamath already knew, I love to kill. I want those presents for myself. Hagrid lays the facts down that these giants fight nonstop. This is why the numbers are so small. So to me, them having a fight at this time frame may have happened whether or not Hagrid and the Death Eaters arrived. It did just coincidentally happen after he already gave all of his presents. But knowing that Golgamath this time was plotting anyway with the Death Eaters, to me makes sense. They were putting poison in his head, saying, hey, you wanted to be Gurg anyway.
Right.
Now you could inherit all those presents, plus you could align with us. And they were saying bad things about Hagrid. So maybe Golgamath was being fed all this stuff. Oh, if you listen to this Hagrid guy, they're just going to imprison even more of you. There's going to be even less of you. You have to stand up for the giant race. And he does.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's enough there to me, even without that textual evidence, but just by the simple change of power. To me, there's enough there to suggest that the giants are a little bit more socially and politically aware of their surroundings than we either, one, give them credit for, or two, think they're capable of doing, right? And it's interesting. It's an interesting little bit of information for where the world stands as it relates to the good guys, and that they're not the good guys to everybody, right? Which, because they kind of deserve their fate. They kind of deserve to get it in the head a little bit, not the giants, but like
the good guys,
quote, in quote, good guys.
Well, I mean, if you really think about it, we're facing the most evil, wretched wizard of all time. And the army consists of mostly kids, their teachers, a couple of the kids' parents.
True.
Like, that's who shows up to this wizarding war at the Battle of Hogwarts, is a few sprinkled adult good guys, but really Hogwarts students. So, you know, there was no army coming from all areas. Like, we didn't have people being flown in that we get to hear of or that we see in the movies. So, yeah, I would say for the most part, the population doesn't believe Voldemort's back. They don't want to get their hands dirty in this.
Right.
They're just playing Switzerland.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
Do you have anything else about the giants that you want to mention, Mary?
Not as of now. I think as we move forward with the giants and understanding Grop and everything, I think that will be great, but we move on from this tale. And like I said, we do learn that Hagrid's mom's dead.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that it's like, he's not upset by it, but he's not happy about it. He's like, she just wasn't a very good mother either. So like, yeah, it sucks to suck, man. That is hard because there was such a buildup, about Hagrid's mom. And again, it's just another tool that the author uses to kind of keep jamming it into your face that not all is right, right? That not all is going to be okay. There is no happy ending for Hagrid and his mom. She's dead, and that's it.
It allows us to stop that search.
Right.
You know, as essentially another orphan, just like Harry Potter himself and learning about himself that way, this story allows us to say, this is what you need to know about Hagrid's people and about this side of his family, but that's as much as we're going to go into. We're not going to go on this, like, reclaiming with his mom. Maybe he can bring his mom to the forest to meet the kids. No, like, that is done. The Hagrid that we have now is who we're going to move forward with. I also like Hagrid talking about Olymp and giving her all the praise, talking about how she dresses fancy, and I was a little nervous, but she was able to rough it. Who was the headmistress? This would be like Dumbledore. I mean, Dumbledore has been.
Yeah, this whole book, he's been gone. Whole book, he's been gone.
Oh my gosh, it's crazy. And then, of course, we get Umbridge, showing on up. Rookie mistake, trio. It is year five. You have been sneaking around Hogwarts all over the place. You've got an invisibility cloak, which also happens to be a Deathly Hallow, by the way. You also have the Marauder's map. And yet, you go outside in the snow. Mm-hmm. Have you not watched The Bodyguard with Whitney Houston? There are footprints, children, and you're walking around after hours. Let's be real. They're excited. They haven't seen Hagrid all year. They just had the game happen. Like, they've got all this stuff. So I appreciate that they made a mistake. I'm just shocked that at least Hermione didn't think of it.
Right, right.
But I know that their sheer enthusiasm made up for
it. This whole interaction, I think, is an interesting reaction. And I want to read it just because you did bring up the footsteps. And I just think it's interesting how this all turns out. There are no footsteps leading away from your cabin door. Well, I don't know why that'd be, said Hagrid, tugging nervously at his beard and again glancing toward the corner where Harry, Ron, and Hermione stood as though he was asking for help. Imagine that. Like, it feels to them like he's asking them for help. Yeah. He does have he has some sense of danger. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has a clear sense of danger, but it is what it is. Umbridge wheeled around and strode the length of the cabin, looking around carefully. She bent and peered under the bed. She opened Hagrid's cupboards. She passed within 2 inches of where Harry, Ron, and Hermione stood pressed against the wall. Harry actually pulled in his stomach as she walked by. And after looking carefully inside the enormous cauldron Hagrid used for cooking, she wheeled around again and said, "What has happened to you? How did you sustain those injuries?" Right? So,
gamekeeper,
yeah.
I needed a bit of fresh air.
It's the gall of this lady to enter this guy's home. I agree, it is property of the school, but she's looking under his bed. She's opening the cupboards. Her first consideration is, what is going on in here? And then, naturally, her next bit of concern is Hagrid's injuries. Not like, oh my God, are you okay? But, hey, what happened to you? What'd you do? How'd you get those? Like, can you imagine the kind of stugats this lady's got to just walk in there?
I mean, she's and do what she's able doing to do whatever she's wanted to do all this time.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime anyone gets up and faces her, she then shuts them down with another educational decree. She feels emboldened to the nth degree.
Yeah. And then Hagrid hastily removed the dragon steak from his face, which in Harry's opinion was a mistake because the black eye and the purple bruising all around his eye was now clearly visible, not to mention the large amount of fresh and congealed blood on his face. "Oh, I had a bit of an accident," he said lamely. "What sort of accident?" I tripped.
You tripped?
Yeah, that's right. Over a friend's broomstick. I don't fly myself. Well, look at the size of me. I don't reckon there'd be a broomstick that'd hold me. Friend of mine breeds Braxton horses. I don't know if you've ever seen them. Big beasts, swings, do you know? I've had a bit of a ride on one of them, and it was, where have you been? Asked Umbridge, cutting coolly through Hagrid's babbling. Where have I been? Yes, she said. Term started 2 months ago. Another teacher has had to cover your classes. None of your colleagues have been able to give me any information as to your whereabouts. You left no address. Where have you been? There was a pause in which Hagrid stared at her with his newly uncovered eye. Harry could almost hear his brain working furiously. I've been away for me health, he said. For your health? Said Professor Umbridge. Her eyes traveled over Hagrid's discolored and swollen face, dragon blood dripping gently and silently on his waistcoat. I see. Yeah, said Hagrid. Bit of fresh air, you know? Yes, as gamekeeper, fresh air must be so difficult to come by, said Umbridge sweetly. The small patch of Hagrid's face that was not black or purple flushed. Well, change of scene, you know. Mountain scenery? Said Umbridge swiftly. She knows, Harry thought desperately. Mountains, Hagrid repeated, clearly thinking fast. No, south of France for me, but bit of sun and sea.
See, it's hard to read.
I know. but I like this I like this back and forth between Umbridge and Hagrid and what that means for the both of them.
I would have loved to have seen this. Being a Hagrid lover myself, I would have loved to see his adventure of going out there, visiting, seeing the giants, meeting up with a vampire. I'm here for it. But this interaction right here, where he has no idea who he's talking to.
I know.
The power she has, and he's just blubbering away, making up terrible lies one after another. Bless his sweetheart. Mm-hmm. This is not going to end well for my beloved Hagrid.
And the last thing I want to mention here, Mary, too, is Hermione. Hermione, to me, in the books, I'm just not in love with the character in the books. I like her better in the movies. But there is something that she does at the end of this chapter that, to me, is really prescriptive of the kind of girl that I think Hermione is. Mm-hmm. You know, she has freely admitted that she doesn't think that Hagrid is the best teacher. And she may be correct. That might be the honest to God truth. However, there's also this great opportunity for Hermione to stick up for Hagrid. And the final paragraph is this. "Then I'll go back again tomorrow," said Hermione determinedly. "I'll plan his lessons for him if I have to. I don't care if she throws out Trelawney, but she's not getting rid of Hagrid."
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
Yes.
And I love that because, you know, she's clearly drawing a line in the sand. You know, there are certain things that Hermione is willing and able to put up with and to do. Mm-hmm. But when you get rid.
Don't you dare mess with Hagrid.
Yeah, like you don't touch Hagrid, right? Like I don't know. I think it's important that Hermione has this draw and that she has this level of connection to somebody that gives her an instant rebuttal to Umbridge. She already has one, right, because of Harry and everything. But like, there's now you can now really truly feel the personal investment against Umbridge in this instance. You know,
well, you think about how much she was already doing to stand up for the elves.
Yeah.
And how she was willing to go out and knit all those hats and socks. And now this is someone who she's even closer with?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we already know. We already know the levels to which Hermione will go to not listen to Umbridge. Sure. She's already created Dumbledore's army. So I would have also said I will write this lesson.
All right. You got anything else?
That is it.
All right. You ready to close this bad boy out? All right, let's do it.
Oh, we didn't do a different perspective.
Oh, you're right. I didn't even think about that. All right, you ready for a different perspective?
Sure.
All right, here we go.
Holy cricket, you're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Fang.
Fang?
Yeah, I'm
Whoa. How you been, Fang?
I don't really know. I'm acknowledged in this chapter.
Yeah.
But like, was I on the trip? Have I been home alone all this time? Am I Kevin McAllister? I wish my family would disappear.
I wish my family would disappear.
So last summer, I wished Hagrid would disappear. And then he did. And all of a sudden, the Scrubbly Plank lady came over.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm assuming is Scrubbly Plank.
Yeah, I would imagine. Sure.
I have no idea. Like, I have no idea. Did Frank go with him? Anyway, yeah.
Was Fang just stuck in the house?
I don't know.
Did he have like a litter box?
Does he have a doggy door? Let's go with that.
So he left me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went out my dog door.
Yeah.
Went to the forest.
Uh-huh.
Chatted with the Thestrals.
Mm.
I chased a lot of rabbits. Saw some unicorns. And, then these guys tried to break into my house. They were called the Wet Bandits.
Although I think they've been known as the Sticky Bandits as well.
They also, yes. So I devised this grand thing with all the toys I could find. Chewed up bones. The Nifflers helped me out a lot.
Some random paint cans I could find.
They brought all the shiny cars, all the shiny toys. The blast-ended Skrook gave me some tips, and I faced him off.
I talked to Aragog, too. I tried to get one of the little baby spiders.
To crawl on their face? And I did it. And Hagrid has no idea. He just gave me a hug.
Hagrid, your girlfriend. Woof.
I hope he doesn't leave again.
Your girlfriend, woof. End scene.
Oh, man.
Well, I was thinking, I'm like, okay, who could I do that's part of the trio? Like, all I could talk about how Ron's too tall. And could I be Umbridge? But we know what she's thinking. And the only other being there is Fang. And then my mind realizes, where's Fang been?
Right.
Who fed Fang?
Just hanging out, man.
I mean, you could have an automatic cat, a dog food thing, but that got to run out. Fang's a big dog.
Oh, man. All right. You ready to close this bad boy out now?
I am.
All right. Let's do it.
Thank you all so incredibly much for tuning in to this episode of the Potterverse. We are coming to you with more episodes now that we are done recording The Crown. And also, for those of you who are interested in Percy Jackson, we actually just wrapped up the series review for the television series that aired on Disney Plus. My son, Reese, who is 10 years old, a huge Harry Potter fan who you've heard here on the Potterverse, is also a huge Percy Jackson fan. So if you or someone in your life enjoys Percy Jackson and watch the show, we recommend that you check out The Percy Jackson Prophecy with Mary and Reese. And don't worry, Blake still makes an appearance in every single episode with a bunch of details, so yes, you'll still get your Blake fix as well.
By all accounts, a lot of you were listening or are watching Percy Jackson, by the way. Apparently, it's broken records in terms of its viewership and streaming rates on Disney Plus, even those that are held by Marvel. So I'm sure a lot of you nerds out there are watching it. Take a listen to The Percy Jackson Prophecy by Mary and Blake Media. All right, Marvin, that's it.
All right. My name's Mary.
My name's Blake.
And Mischief Managed.